This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2019, held in Montgomery, Indiana, on March 1 and 2.
Good morning, boys and girls.
Good morning, teacher.
Tomorrow we're going to start achievement tests. And these tests are going to take 2 mornings, tomorrow morning and Wednesday morning. How many of you have taken achievement tests before? Okay, so you're a little bit familiar with them. These tests are designed to measure how well you know reading, math, language, and spelling. And this helps us to know how well you're doing as students and also how we're doing as a school. Now, achievement tests are a lot different from the tests that you normally take, like when you get to the end of a chapter and you take a test or you take a light unit test. They're a lot harder. In fact, achievement tests are designed so that an average student will only get about half the answers right. So these are going to be tough. You're going to come across things that you haven't studied before, but don't worry, you're not expected to get all the answers right. And what if you come to problems that are just really, really hard and you don't know what to do with them? Should you cry? Would that make you feel better? Well, if it makes you feel better, I suppose you can, but I don't think you'll have to. Just do the best you can, skip over the problems you don't understand, and don't worry about them, because you're not expected to get them all right. Now, achievement tests take a lot of thinking, and so tonight I would like for you to get to bed in good time, and tomorrow maybe you should ask your mom to fix you a good breakfast, maybe some eggs, rather than a bunch of sugary cereal, and that will help you think more clearly. So you're ready for achievement tests. Good morning, boys and girls.
Good morning, teacher.
Today we're going to start our achievement tests. Did you get a good night's sleep? Did you get a good breakfast? One first grade girl went home and told her mom, "Mom, you have to fix me eggs." And Mom raised her eyebrows because this girl hated eggs. But Mom fixed her an egg and she dutifully choked it down. And she came to school ready for achievement tests. So I learned that students, especially young ones, take teachers and especially big old male principals very seriously. Okay, students, you may not be in the same classroom this morning for the tests, but we want to make sure you understand what you're doing and that you know where you're going to be taking your tests. First grade, you're going to be up in room 1 and Sister Kayla is going to be giving you your tests. You know where room 1 is? Yes, that's our classroom. That's our teacher. Second grade and third grade, you're going to be in room 2 with Sister Bear. You know where that is because that's where you normally are. Fourth and fifth grade, you're going to be in a different spot. You're going to be in the kitchen, and Sister Laurel is going to be giving you your tests. And then sixth, seventh, and eighth, you're going to be in room 3, and I'm going to be supervising your tests. And high schoolers, you will be right across the curtain in room 4, and we'll have the curtain open, and I'll be giving instructions to both sets of you. And then I would quietly tell Susanna that she will be in the library with Sister Crystal. She's learning disabled. She's going to be taking the test all by herself. We won't be giving her the time deadlines that we would give to the other students, and just see what she can do. Now, students, before you start taking the tests, make sure that you have 2 sharp pencils. Your teachers will give you time to sharpen your pencils, or that you have a good Eversharp with nice dark lead to fill in the bubbles. You also should have a good eraser, and you need some scrap paper so that you can work out the math problems and then fill out the answers on your sheets. And sorry, you're not going to be able to use calculators on these tests. In fact, I tell my 8th graders, I wouldn't necessarily tell them during achievement tests, but I tell them different times, students have a tendency to push the on button on the calculator and the off button up here. And I tend to razz them about that. They come to this simple problem and they start punching. I said, "What are you doing? Do it in your head." "Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, we can do that." Back to the test. Most of the problems on the test are multiple choice, where you fill in the bubble beside the best answer. And here's an example. I heard the blank moo. And you need to pick out the right answer or the best answer and fill in the bubble. So, I heard the dog moo. No. I heard the cat moo. No. By this time, they're just squirming in their seats. I heard the cow moo. Yes. So, okay, well, when you fill in your bubble, you don't do it like this. You're supposed to fill in a whole bubble nice and clean. And if you make a mistake, you erase it just as cleanly as you can, and you fill it in as neatly and as completely as you can. So that's how you do it. Now, a lot of your test problems are going to be way harder than this one, but that's an example to get you started. When you do the test, make sure that you take enough time to read each question carefully and answer it. If you don't know the answer, you're allowed to guess, but make sure that you at least read the question. And if you're not sure about an answer, you can skip over it and then come back to it later if you still have time left. Your teachers are going to be giving you instructions as far as the time limits on each part of the test. They'll give you instructions for filling in your answer sheets, and make sure you follow those carefully. When you get done with a section of the test, check back over your answers to make sure that they are marked correctly and that you didn't miss any of them. And please don't just go zipping through the test to get done before everybody else. Invariably, you have students that do that. They go racing through the test, not even necessarily to beat everybody, but just to get done with it. And so you go back to them and you say, "Are you done already?" "Yeah." "Well, maybe you should go back and check over the answers." "Okay." And a minute flat, they're done checking over the answers too. So you can only do so much. Students, it is important that you work as quietly as possible. I'm going to be moving around the classroom once in a while to see how it's going. If you have a question, raise your hand and I'll come over and whisper to me so things are as quiet as they can be. And if you get done early, you can have a book at your desk to read quietly, or if you want to work on schoolwork, you can do that too, but just make sure you stay at your seat. We're going to give you a short break in between testing sessions once in a while so you can use the restroom or get a drink. But when you do that, make sure that you're very quiet in the hallways because other classes may still be taking tests. So when we're done with some of these instructions, then we'll send them to their classrooms. We'll pass out the test booklets and the response sheets, and then they get further instructions from there as they go through the tests. Why do we need tests? We're constantly measuring. Maybe you bake a cake, and the way that you measure whether that cake was any good or not was how many people asked for seconds on it. Maybe you drill a well, and you need to know if this is a successful well. Well, you may judge, is the water fit to drink, or does it have such a high iron or sulfur content that it's going to need some serious treatment? Is the flow sufficient, enough gallons per minute from that well? So you got to measure it. If you start a business, you need to measure it. Is it making a profit? Is it making enough profit to support my family? What about your life? Your life is going to be measured. And this is a pass-fail test. It's either well done, good and faithful servant, or depart from me. And so that is a very serious measurement. And then thinking about a measure of a school. Are the children learning what they need to know in order to function well in the home, in the business, in the local community, and of course in the church? So we have to measure things. Now, measurements can be more or less precise. If I have a VW Beetle, I can, with the right equipment, I can clock the time from 0 to 60 to the tenth of a second. And it's not going to be very impressive, but anyhow, it can still be done. The Sears Tower can be measured to within a tenth of an inch in height. The distance from Napanee to Sarasota, Florida can be measured to within a tenth of a mile over a specific route. But then you get Susan's achievement test back, and it says she has a grade equivalent score of a 6.5 in her reading vocabulary. Is that an actual accurate measurement? Can you be that precise? Well, precise numbers give you a good idea, but they're not perfect, because the human mind is not subject to precise measurement. It changes from minute to minute. We all have good days and bad days. We respond differently in mornings than we do late afternoons and evenings. And so you can't measure that precisely. A 1x12 board, you can get exact measurements for it, and it varies very little, except maybe with humidity and temperature. The mind is not that way. There's variables that affect the human mind and the testing environment. If the classroom is 80 degrees inside, don't expect students to do their best on a test. Or maybe there's a branch thumping against a window, or maybe the fire truck goes by and poof, some of that concentration is gone. Relationships will affect how a student does on a test. You have a different teacher come in to administer the test, one the student's not familiar with and maybe just a little bit scared of. They probably won't do as well as if the classroom teacher gives the test. Or maybe I am trying to compete with Mary Ann across the aisle, and so I work a little extra hard compared to the student that says, well, I'm going to be at the bottom of my class anyhow, so I may as well not try. So relationships affect test results. Health affects how people do on a test. If you have a headache, you simply can't think as well. If you had a breakfast of Fruit Loops and 7-Up, you probably won't do as well as if you had that egg, whether you liked it or not. And then, of course, attitude, positive or negative attitude, will definitely affect the test. And that is part of why I like to have a little rah, rah, rah session, or whatever you want to call it, at the beginning of achievement test, get them all excited about a very obvious answer. They go into it thinking, oh yeah, we can do this. And even when it gets hard, they know that there are going to be difficult problems, and so they're prepped for that. I think I'll go ahead and pass out the handouts now. Now, can everyone at least see one?
There's a few extras here.
Okay, there's a couple extras there. If you look at these handouts, we're not going to be able to cover everything on there. Some of the things at the end of the handout, how do we go about testing? I demonstrated some of that at the beginning of the classroom period, so I may not spend a lot of time on that. But thinking about achievement tests, we talked some about the hows. I'd like to think a little bit more about the whys. Besides the fact that we need to measure, the goal of testing, you'll see this on the first page of your handout, I think there are two specific goals. One is to measure a student's knowledge and skills as accurately as possible, and the second is to report those results clearly and accurately. And there's a challenge in both of them. The entire testing industry is an ongoing research and scientific development, understanding how people respond to tests, and devising and developing tests that will measure as accurately as possible. And notice it mentions knowledge and skills. Skills areas are especially important, whether it's reading or math or language, and those are things that don't change a lot from year to year. Now, if you have tests that incorporate history, geography, other aspects of social studies and science, some of those tests become dated pretty quickly. But some of your core skills, reading, math, and English, those are the ones that are really important to measure. And then to report those results clearly and accurately. There's a lot of different scales of measurement that are used in achievement tests that are quite different from what we're used to. Most of the time at home, Student takes a lot unit test. They're looking for a percent grade. 100% is great, and 80% is just passing. And below that, then there's some remedial work needs to be done in order to bring that grade up to an 80. And we understand that percent grade. Achievement tests, the percent grade means absolutely nothing. The percentile score is completely different. Percentile is how you rank compared with other students, and I'll talk a little bit about criterion and norm referencing in a few minutes here. So again, the goal of testing is to measure a student's knowledge and skills as accurately as possible, and then to report those results clearly and accurately. It may be to parents, it may be to board members, anyhow, those need to be reported to the kind of people who are looking for those results. The reasons for testing, if you condense it into two words, it would be independent measurement. We have all sorts of tests that we give, especially with our curriculum, plus teacher evaluations, how is this student doing in class, are they getting it? There's all sorts of ways to measure progress, but achievement tests are the only test that is totally independent of your program. There's a reason why the directions for administering achievement tests are so precisely laid out. If you use the CAT test, like the CAT 70, they tell you you're supposed to read this to the students, then read this to the students, and then set the timer for so much, and warn them of so many minutes before the timer goes off. And that is so that the testing conditions are as similar as possible from one school to the next and are not affected by individual teachers or classrooms. So it's independent. It's totally outside of the school's control as far as manipulating anything. There's five things here that I've got under reasons for testing, and that independent measurement flavors all five of those items. Number one, to measure students' mastery of concepts and basic skills appropriate to their grade level. How well are these students learning? Number two, to help parents and teachers to identify both general and specific strengths and weaknesses in each individual student's knowledge. And whether you use our program or someone else's testing program, you have an individual student profile to see how this particular student did. Number three, to promote academic achievement and responsibility in our schools, to provide an outside standard to which schools can be accountable. Goes along with the independent aspect of this measurement. Number four is to help schools evaluate the effectiveness of their curriculum choices and implementation. We've done a curriculum survey several times. The latest one covers the years 2015 through 2017. And you can see how the curriculum you're using compares with other curricula. And interestingly enough, people ask me, you know, do you see huge differences? And the answer is no. The top three curriculums that our Anabaptist schools use are CLE, Rod and Staff, and Abeka. And the ones that use our particular testing service, we probably have more that use Rod and Staff than anything else. But you compare those three, especially across from each other, there's variations here and there. One curriculum might introduce a concept later on than another one does, and so the earlier curriculum looks better early on, but things tend to even themselves out as you go along. There's so many other factors that also affect curriculum. I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here, but the size of classes, the skills of the teachers, whether it's just a girl that's just out of school or it's a veteran who's been at it for quite a number of years. The classroom format, whether it's individualized or conventional or maybe a mix of the two. Personally, I like a mix. I teach grades 8 to 11. We have English and math and reading or literature classes together. And it seems so much more meaningful to get together around the table, talk about it. Some students really thrive on that. Others enjoy it, but it may not make that much of a difference. But to me, that's very valuable. And then have some of the other subjects they can work at on their own speed. That seems to work for us. I used to be a gung-ho individualized promoter back when I didn't know a whole lot. but that's kind of mellowed a little bit over the years. But anyhow, you can measure curriculum choices and implementation, at least somewhat, with achievement tests. And then number five is to provide a benchmark of achievement for a school from year to year, where you can see your individual students, you can see their progress from 1 year to the next. You can see your school progress from 1 year to the next as well. And somebody asked me yesterday, can you evaluate a teacher by the achievement test results of her students, his or her students? And I think yes and no. Yes is that achievement tests help add to the picture, but no, achievement tests don't provide the full picture. If there's reasons to wonder, and you're hearing stories, and you're just not sure, things seem chaotic, and you wonder if the children are learning anything, and then if you get achievement test results back that show that that class did much poorer this year than it did last year, well, then that's confirmation. But I wouldn't rely strictly on that. Okay, any questions so far? Is there a clock in here? I'm not sure.
What is the normal for who gets to see the achievement tests?
Okay. On the back of your handout, which I wasn't sure if I was going to get to that or not, so I'm glad you asked that, reporting test results, I have parents, the board, if appropriate, and I think that's often appropriate, especially the summaries of the grades in the school. The other staff members or the principal, especially if they're affected by it, or if they're the teacher of the students, but probably not students. There's a couple reasons for it. Probably the one that comes first to mind is the bright student is going to really feel good and the poor one is going to really feel bad, and that's valid. But the other thing is achievement test scores are so different than regular scores that they're not going to understand them very well unless you really spend time explaining them to them. For our school, and I know a lot of other schools do this as well, is we have parent-teacher conferences maybe a week or two after achievement tests. And often we'll have the latest report card ready for them to look at, and also the achievement test results. And they can look at that, and often they kind of stare blankly at it, and, you know, what does this mean? That's our opportunity as teachers to explain what some of the different scores are, maybe to point out areas where your student went up this year, or maybe areas where they went down a little bit. If there's any specific issues you're struggling with, there's a chance to look at some of the details there. Now, we don't send them home with the parents. Some schools do. There's a number of them, they order duplicate test results. They keep one set on file at the school and the other they send home with the parents. But I would caution the parents about showing them to the children unless they're really confident they can explain it well. That would be my recommendation. Some schools test at the very end of the year. I think I may have referred to that on the back of the handout also. Most schools, I should say, test in late spring, whether it's March or April or maybe even into May. And a lot of those will not get their test results back until early June or later. That's fine, but I think they still need to be looked at. And so what I've heard from different schools is that in the fall, they will have parent-teacher conferences and look at the spring test results. If you do that, that's fine. That gives you a little bit of a foundation to go on from there. But don't just throw them in a file cabinet and forget about them. I feel like you're really losing a lot of value there if you do that. Okay, I kind of went off on a tangent there. Any other questions? Yes?
Do you find that parents respond to seeing those scores well and that helps them out? Are they ever like, oh wow, my student's doing that bad, and they're like, you know, offended or anything like that? Is it a good thing usually?
I don't think I've ever had parents that go away down in the mouth about it. Usually if a student's struggling, they already know it. And this might confirm, like, okay, in this specific area, it seems to be a real problem. And we talk about it, we try to be open about that type of thing. Our students tend to score quite well, especially compared to the original public school norms, so most of the time parents are pleasantly surprised when they see test results. So,
one question I got on doing the test itself, you mentioned skipping over problems and coming back. Is it required that the student fill an answer on every question? Or if the student doesn't know the answer, leave it blank?
We encourage students to guess, but we tell them you should at least read the problem.
So where I'm going with that, if they leave it blank when they don't know it, that's 100% I don't know it. If they put an answer and happen to get it right, that's a skewed result, not?
Well, as long as they have read it, often what they'll do is they'll eliminate some obviously wrong options, and maybe they're down in between two of them. And the guessing, the tests are designed to take guessing into account. When the original students took the test, students guessed. And so you're being compared with students who guessed when they weren't sure before, and so when your students guess when they're not sure, it basically comes out in the wash. I do not like to have students struggle with conscience when they're taking a test. You're not sure about the answer, go ahead and fill something in. You at least looked at it. Now, we've gotten student response sheets where A is filled out, and then B, and then C, and then D, and then E, and then it goes backwards. You got a nice little zigzag going down the sheet. You know the student didn't look at the questions. They just drew designs. But as long as you have time to read the question, go ahead and fill in the bubble. That's kind of the way it's... Yes?
I've had students before go too slow and then get to the end and be like, oh, I'm almost out of time, and they didn't even finish it. You don't want that to happen, do you? Because then they're all considered wrong.
No. Whether it's a guessed wrong answer or whether it's a blank answer, they're both counted wrong. Some of them... The newer tests, they take scoring into account where a blank answer is treated differently than a guessed answer. And you can actually, if you think it through, you can actually penalize a student for guessing. You can be smart enough to figure out that they guessed. And I can't explain quite all of that, all the science behind it, but it's amazing what they can make out from four bubbles on a question and compare it with the rest of the test. Let's go through a few more things here, and I'll try to open it again for questions, and I still don't know what time it is. 11:00, ooh, okay. A few cautions about testing. This is on the second page. We have, there's a district of Amish schools in northern Indiana, or northeastern Indiana, that test together, and we score them together, and so on. And I went to one of their meetings and talked to them, and before the meeting, a couple of older male teachers took me aside and said, we think there are teachers cheating on this test because their test results look way too good compared with the other students or the other schools. And they suspected that maybe the teachers were teaching to the test. And I actually had somebody mention it yesterday when I was talking to them. Yeah, our teacher used to spend a week beforehand going over stuff we didn't know. For the test, that's not what you're supposed to do. We want to accurately measure students. Whether it's good or bad, we want to be accurate. If it's too good, it doesn't do any better than if it's too bad. You got to know, we're trying to know honestly where our students are. Also recognize limitations. A test is a snapshot of your students' skills taken on one particular day, kind of like a driver's license picture. You'll love them, but it does show who you are. And I suppose if you went in every day for a year and took it from different angles and everything, you could piece together a very accurate representation of who you are from driver's license pictures. Well, the test is a snapshot from one day. So it's good, it's valuable, but don't take it too seriously. If a student takes a test and it seems totally skewed from their previous years, it may be ask some questions. What may have changed here, and keep that in mind. Use discernment in making important decisions. Pass-fail scenarios. I cringe a little bit if someone says you have to have a certain grade on this achievement test to go on to the next school year. Unless they already know there's problems here and we need something to help us tip one way or the other, then that may be useful, but don't take it just by itself. If your test results support your teacher's observations, the tests that they take throughout the year, their report cards, it can help tip the decision one way or another, but it should definitely not be the only guideline to use. Okay. The criterion referencing, we kind of talked about that a little bit, so I think maybe I'll just kind of skim over it. Criterion referencing is used all the time in our classroom tests. Often it's a grade, percent grade. It may be a letter score, A, B, C, D, or F. It may simply be a pass-fail thing. You go to take your driver's test behind the wheel, it's generally just pass-fail. You either passed it or you bombed it. And they don't necessarily tell you anything specific. That's what you want to know. Those are all criterion-based tests. Norm referencing is simply comparing students with each other in the same peer group, as the same grade level, the same time of the year, and that's where percentile scores come in. And I mentioned that the average student, on a good test, the average student will only get half the problems right. That's because it's designed to spread students out. When you teach a class of students, you would like for all of them to get 95s or 100s, right? Well, that's criterion reference testing. For norms testing, you want to spread them out so you can see what is the poorest, what is the best, and where does this student fall on this scale here. And that's why achievement tests tend to be much more difficult than other tests. Okay, it looks like we have about 5 minutes left here. This is not really achievement testing. I don't know how many of you wondered why I put this little guy up here. There's a little bit of a story there. In working on the CAT Forms program and so on, especially over the last couple of years, we're getting more involved in expanding as far as the programming and that type of thing. And I am digging into SQL Server and a few other things that just kind of boggle my mind. And I enjoy it, especially when you work on something for days and all of a sudden it comes together and clicks. This is working. Great. Well, in reading, I found that some programmers have a tradition of having a rubber ducky on their desk. And when they get stalled on something, they write code that makes the computer do something and it's not working, you take the rubber ducky and you explain exactly what you're doing to the rubber duck. And this duck is rather stupid, pardon the expression, but he just doesn't know very well, so you have to explain it as simply and clearly as possible. And as you're in the process of explaining what you're doing as simply and clearly as possible, often your logical errors will suddenly pop in your mind and, oh, okay, I know what I'm doing wrong here. And so you fix it. But in the meantime, the duck doesn't mouth back to you. He doesn't laugh at you if you're doing something really dumb. If you really threw a tantrum, you could throw him across the room and he'll probably just bounce right back. Although throwing a tantrum even with a rubber duck, I'm not sure that if that gains you anything. But, and I've told this to my students. The reason being is it's good for us as teachers, as older ones, whatever, wherever we find ourselves, to learn something that pushes us, that stretches us. And, okay, you've got a student who's struggling with a math concept and you think, why can't he get it? Well, if you are working on something you are just barely getting yourself, you tend to be more sympathetic with that. And if they know you're working on something like that, I had my programming book laying out and I said, this is kind of what I'm working on. And students look at it and say, oh, well, that's way beyond us. That's not the idea that's beyond them. The idea is the teacher has something he's struggling with as well as, and he understands a little bit what they're doing there. Okay, any more questions? Yes, in the back.
Are you saying that it's okay to have like the teacher give his own class the test, or should it be somebody else coming in and testing the class?
If possible, I would prefer the teacher himself does it. Because they hopefully they built some rapport with the students, and since they are specifically following instructions on the directions for administering it, they should not be skewing their students' results by, obviously you're not supposed to help them figure out the answers. So the more comfort, the more comfort for the students, I think the better they do.
On reporting test results to whom, you say board, if appropriate. Would you explain that, what you mean by that? I assumed before that it's primarily a board tool. Board and staff, both.
Yes. Like giving the summaries to the board, I would be fine with that. Individual student results, if you have a struggling student, you're trying to make a pass-fail decision, I think it'd be appropriate to bring those results to the board, but not just across the board, so to speak. Yes?
Is this something that may require by the state or to have on record? Or?
For the most part, it is not. And I know some schools take tests because, well, we're supposed to. The laws in the United States, and I think Canada too, are the pretty hands-off about our private schools. Now, is it good to have those records on file in case situations change in the future? I think it is. But if you're taking it just because you're scared that you'll be in trouble if you don't, that's really not one of the biggest reasons to test.
When do they normally give this student person their results of when school's over? At what age, 20, 25?
I have had students come back and ask after they've graduated, can I see my test results? Sure. They look at it and their eyes kind of glaze over, but they have a chance to look at them. So, yeah.
How long, would they stay in school record forever? If somebody would move to Texas or wherever, when does the school release that for person's
ours, we keep files until our file cabinet's too full. And then we ask, does anybody want their old school records? Mm. Now, that's not a very good gauge to go by.
Okay. It's permissible if somebody moves. They're permissible for them
yes.
to take it. It does not hinder the school in any way.
Like if they would move, somebody moves and requests records, we'd be more likely to photocopy everything. Mm. And maybe give them the originals or vice versa. Feel free to send them or send them to the other school for them.
Oh, as children move, but like a 30-year-old all of a sudden wakes up and the school's important, is he allowed to, do we just photocopy it and give him?
I would have no problem with doing that, yeah.
I read about a teacher who would sort of show the students how the achievement test works, but these types of things, but he would like go in math with math problems, and he would have four different answers, and like he would show them how sometimes they put this wrong answer here because this is for the student that forgot to carry the one over. This mm-hmm. is for the student, this wrong one is for the student that plus this one here wrong. Is that okay, or do you feel like that's helping the student too much? It's more showing how it works, not showing the concept.
This would be like before they actually dig in and take the test?
Yeah.
Yes. I wouldn't have a problem with that as long as the actual problem doesn't show up on the test. It's interesting evaluating some of the, the math things in the achievement tests. You look through there, here's the correct answer. Why did they give the other three? And you can somebody for one is they forgot to carry, or they forgot to borrow, or they added sideways instead of vertically, or that type of thing. It's interesting what they used to make the wrong answers. Okay, I think we are running over here, and I apologize for that. I guess 11:15, right? Okay, we're about 3 minutes over that. So, thanks for your attention.
One more question.
Yes.
Do you keep records of all the scoring all the schools yourself?
Yes. We've got over 100,000 student test records on file, and we try to keep them rigorously backed up.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.